now, for something completely different, here is your host, Brian Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and people of all sexes, and everyone still mourning the loss of Ryan Binkley in the Republican presidential primary, welcome to the Please Pass the Bugs episode of The Two and Only, our weekly revelations of the latest obscenities from the logic-free zone, where truth and your tax dollars go to die. But only after being thoroughly abused by the scum collectively known as government. Brian Wilson's my name, occasional Substack scribbler, nearly famous radio and TV talk show host, and last living legend before the Dundalk exit for the Roach Rouge Hotel and Toe Fungus Museum. Joining me once again is nationally worshipped best-selling author of Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty, the rambunctious rapscallion of the New York Post opinion page, having just declared his beard a sanctuary city for the migrating titmouse, James Bovard. Welcome, James.
Ryan, how are you doing? So what happened with that defamation lawsuit from the Dundalk Chamber of Commerce?
Well, like I think I posted somewhere, they're welcome to pursue that with the chamber. The guy who heads it up is in his office every other February. And you just file the papers and let's go to town. I'm ready. I need to get up there for the overhand bowling tournament.
Yeah, and any lawsuit would be covered differently than it would have been last week. And you know why?
Why?
Did you hear what happened to the Baltimore Sun?
It got sold.
To the Sinclair, the guy who heads the Sinclair Media Group. So it's going to be, I think the editorials might be a little different now.
Could be. I recall Sinclair, the broadcasting arm, had a pretty decent reputation among those of us in the biz at the time.
Not with NPR, but that's another story. Well, yeah, he's bringing in Armstrong Williams, I guess, as part owner or some type of relationship. I'm not sure the details, but since you're a former Maryland guy, you might want to check into that.
Oh, I don't know. I think that there's certain reputations have a longer shelf life than others. That. Although Armstrong Williams and I and Bob Madigan and, I can't recall the other names. They were pretty well known in Washington circles at the time. We were on a panel at the Heritage Foundation about the future of talk radio. And it was a good time. It was a good time, although Armstrong Williams tends to be a little bit too straight-laced for my brand of talk radio. And I'm sure he thought that I was out of order, obscene, too loud, and whatever. But then I'd compare ratings to them any time.
Brian, I've always thought of you as being soft-spoken compared to Howard Stern.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll go with the outspoken part. I competed against Howard and Don Imus in New York for a few years, and
whipped their ass at least in their first couple rounds.
Yeah, I did. Of course, they'll come back and say, well, it depends on what ratings you're looking at, because you can make those numbers say just about anything. If you're looking at 18 to 24-year-old males, Stern, kicked butt on that. But then
guys who never get laid and spend all their time thinking about,
I've
got to listen to Howard Stern talk about the size of his tool.
That's right. Because he's got, what did he have at the time? I think it was... he had a tennis match between two lesbians, I believe, or something like that. It was supposed to be naked lesbians. I think that was the
naked lesbians. So you listen to that on the radio.
Yeah.
And it's the highlight of your week.
Yeah.
Sad.
Stern rules. Yeah. Right. You know, and I mean, there was a lot of things that happened up there. And again, as far as Cume and 12 plus, 25 plus, 25, 54, those golden demographics on. Yeah. He kicked ass, his and Don Imus's. Don Imus had the 65 and 55 plus audience, males, the people who listened to him forever, and had all the beer drinkers over in Brooklyn and Queens and that kind of business. I don't take anything away from that. Don was a real talent in his day. But the last 10 years ago with the, what was that remark about the Rutgers, girls basketball team, and they got him in hot water and other things like that. It was just not hubris started to take over.
No, really? I mean, that's unusual in talk radio.
Yeah, I don't know that. Well, I guess that's what you'd call it. What he did, but he did a lot of creative things in the early days when they were in music.
Hey, most important thing he did, he was the keynote at the White House Correspondents' Dinner one year, right?
Yes.
And he was great. Oh my goodness, he just grabbed everybody by the back of the neck and rubbed their noses in it. And oh my goodness, it was catnip to watch his performance there.
I was always hoping I'd get a shot at that gig, but it's kind of like, what was his name, Ricky Gervais doing the TV awards?
Golden Globes, was it? Or...
Yeah, I think it was the Golden Globes. And that was, man, oh, that's classic.
He was great and never to return, but, you know, he didn't need to return.
Yeah, after a shot like that, you know, well, that's it. It's kind of like being the fastest gun in the West. I don't have to. It's kind of like the same attitude that Trump has about showing up at the debates. Why? Got 50%, 60%, 70% approval and all the rest. You want to come in there and argue with a bunch of people that are not even in double digits. It's not going to make any sense. But, yeah, those were the days. Those were the days. I wish them all the best. I don't know that they would be I'll drop them a note. I don't think that I just don't think talk radio, as it stands right now, is inclined to, from a corporate standpoint, is inclined to do me. You know, they there's
true,
much...
but I mean, I have no idea how they might be changing the lineup. And since you are doing the Substack columns now, you might want to see if they'd be interested in picking up some of that because, yeah. I mean, there's Maryland is a state you've lived in off and on so many a number of times, and it's and it was interesting. Baltimore Sun had some really good editorial page opinion editors back in the 90s and early 00s. Been a long time, and the last couple of times I dealt with them, it was kind of like, you know, I don't do tear sheets. You aren't paying me for the article, lady. No. I mean, anyhow, that's a different story.
Yeah. Well, that was quite a group up there at the time. They there were one or two folks that stood out and had the guts and the integrity and the vocabulary to write some pretty good material. But I waged my wars against them and William Donald Schaefer. And
oh, he was a hoot! My goodness, he was a hoot.
Yeah, it's too bad he didn't take himself that much as I mean, it was fine for a little while, but then, you know, there were issues and laws and things that he did that were just over the line. He had to be called out about it. Now all of a sudden it's not fun anymore. When he used to send the state troopers out to pull over out-of-state cars with tinted windows heading north because they would go down to Florida or some of the southern states and buy a whole carload of cigarettes, cartons.
Oh, yeah.
And then bring them up to, you know, like Maryland, which had a horrendous tax on tobacco, and further up to New York and so on, like you've seen in The Sopranos and all the rest of that. So he sent them out there and just be pulling over people left and right, just for the hell of it, whether or not they had any in the car or not, just had tinted glass. There were a number of things up there that we went around about. It was fun. It was fun until it wasn't. And like that, I just don't think that, I don't think the corporate radio, and one of the big reasons that radio is kind of caca now is that, aside from streaming and FM and cable and all the rest of that, is the corporate just doesn't have the guts enough to take it to the line anymore. I think if Rush was still alive, he might still be on the air, but I think he'd be facing some serious sponsor problems, things along that order, because sponsors don't want to be anywhere where that controversy takes place, where they're getting called out. Maybe the woke business with Budweiser and some of those other things have started to change things, but... I don't know.
Yeah, it's similar for a lot of newspapers. I mean, back in the 1980s and 1990s, a lot of editors liked the stuff I wrote because it would stir things up and get people riled.
Yeah.
That's not so appreciated nowadays.
No, it's really astounding to me, you know, how just what you just said, how that has changed, where you'd say something, there'd be a light coating or not so light coating of sarcasm that was over the pages or over the air or whatever, and it went well. People got the joke, people got the sarcasm, the irony, the hypocrisy, all the things that were bundled into that, and then they didn't. And I don't know where that happened. I don't know how that happened. You and I had a conversation a while back, meaning the fact that, you know, sarcasm is our second language and nobody speaks it anymore. You might as well slip into Sanskrit or Latin or something like that. It's just, they don't.
It's kind of an age cutoff thing. And it's puzzling because There isn't, I don't think, much difference in the IQ of you know, decade by decade of birth cohorts, but you know, there's a lot of humor which I just don't even try if I'm talking to someone under the age of 30. So it's like, these are not folks who would appreciate George Carlin.
No, that is, yeah, that is absolutely true. And yet, I've never looked at the records, if they're even out there, but the YouTube clips from his different shows and so on are golden. If you can get into that. I don't know that you take someone in that audience at that time, let's say it was 21 years old, and go find a 21-year-old today, you know, here 10, 15 years later, whatever, and play the same clip. I don't know that it would get the same appreciative reaction. There's a story, I have a firsthand experience with it. There's a story, one of the stories in my book, 50 Stories, 50 Years in Radio, is about the time I was on the air in Baton Rouge. This is back in the late 60s. And I was on the air from 1 to 7, you know, 6 hour air shift, which was pretty horrendous. So by the time the last hour came along, you're pretty much running out of gas. And about 6:30 was in the network news, and the phone rang, and I always answered the phone. I said, hello. And this woman said, Brian, yeah, says, I'm calling I want WIBR, the station at the time, it's since gone dark. I want to give you the story first for the news. What story is that? I'm going to commit suicide. Uh-huh. Now, this woman's voice, she sounded like she was maybe 13. And people have to understand that back in those days, and for quite a few days after, gaslighting radio stations was a full-time hobby. To spoof them with Prince Albert in a can and, you know, sure. You know, that kind of routine. And so my first reaction was, this was another sensational attempt to try and get something going. So I said, yeah, okay, great, terrific. You know, when are you going to do this? And she said, right now. I said, okay, wait, what do you do? Knife, spear, grenade? What? And I'm going to shoot myself. Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, give me your name and address, because I'm going to have to make the story sound legitimate, you know, after you blow yourself away. And so she gave me your name and address. I said, okay, well, you all set? I said, okay, well, let it rip. Bang. Silence. Well, I know a little bit about guns, and that didn't sound like a gun. It sounded like a cap gun, you know, to me or something like that. So I said, okay. So I put her on hold, and I figured, you know, if this was a spoof, she'd hang up. Nobody's going to, you know, leave the phone open. These are hardwire phones and so on. And I did something on the air to get back into the show and came back on hold. The line was still open. Well, that's not good. So I put her back on hold, called the cops. I say to Wilson over WIVR, it says this, blah, 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 woman's name, here's her address, this is what she did. You know, maybe it's real. I don't know. Line's still open. We'll send over a unit. Went back and hung up, went back on the hold line, still open. Well, now it's about 20 to 7 on the end of my shift. The news director is actually coming in to do his talk show at 7 o'clock. So I called the engineer and I said, I want you to segue here. This is what happened. I'm going to run down the streets, only a couple of miles down the road, and check it out. And tell Jim I'll call him if there's a story there. So I went out and I hauled ass down to the address, got there same time as the cops. We go up the stairs, and sure enough, look through the window. She's lying in the bed. She's got, you know, blood, you know, on her chest. The cops break the door down, call an ambulance. I get on the phone. I call the radio station. Jim was just getting there going into the news, and he put me on the air and said, this won't blah, 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 blah. 3 years later, I'm at another radio station in Baton Rouge. Secretary says, there's a call for you on line two. Hello, Brian, this is Edie. Okay. You probably don't remember me, but I was just calling to thank you. You saved my life. I'm called you 3 years ago, WIBR, blah, blah, blah. You know, shot myself. I was in a bad place. You called the police and, you know, and basically saved my life. Well, how about that?
That's
I've
great.
Been in therapy for a few years, and I've got my head on straight now, and I'm ready to take on the world, and just wanted to call and offer you my thanks. That was
That's great.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. The reaction I got that from a number of people who bought the book and read that, you know, younger people, said, what a bastard I was. Who the hell, you son of a, you didn't take that woman seriously. You didn't try to talk her out of it. You didn't try to have any conversation with her. You put her on hold. I mean, they really, really went to town. And to the person, the five or six people who've reacted like that to that story, not one of them was over 32.
Interesting.
Anyway, Meanwhile, I just want to confirm one rumor that I heard out of D.C. suburbs that you're in mourning for the loss of your favorite candidate, Asa Hutchinson. You know, that you'd send him a lot of money and for his campaign.
I'm starting to think it was a mistake for me to bet my rent money on Nikki Haley.
Well, there is that. But I did want to change everybody's attention to jimbover.com or the New York Post, whichever you want to get to first. There's an article in there on the appropriate page, the opinion page, from Mr. Bovard, "The Elite's Absurd Davos Crusade, Destroy Freedom to Save Humanity." And I went through that, and I had a couple of questions I want to ask you about. There seems to be a similarity between your opening line about how can governments serve people unless it can find and accost them at any moment, day or night. That's from your article. And then the opening line from Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty: "Americans today have the freedom to be fleeced, groped, wiretapped, injected, censored, injected, ticketed, disarmed, beaten, vilified, detained, and maybe even shot by government agents. Politicians are hell-bent on protecting citizens against everything but Uncle Sam." So I got the sense that there's a continuity here, that at least as far as the agenda from Davos is concerned, they're already there in most cases.
Yeah, well, I think trend line is the word we'd be talking here.
Ah, trend line.
It's not a happy trend line. And, I'm especially worried about trends that have double injections. Let's put it like that. Yeah. Double injections instead of copy editors. It's fascinating to see the ideas that are becoming prominent and the passion for total subjugation of average people. And in order to keep them subjugated, we're also going to have to muzzle them and blindfold them.
Well, yeah, you wrote the WEF has two big goals this year: rebuild trust, quote unquote, and crush dissent, quote unquote. So despite the paraphrasing of the last one, you said instead WEF is proclaiming the greatest peril humanity faces is misinformation and disinformation. Now, I thought that kind of bared a slimy resemblance to the Biden-Harris 24 campaign. The projecting unity, uniting the country on one hand, while calling the other half of the population MAGA extremists and white supremacists.
Well, and don't leave out Hitler, because Hitler had a starring role at Valley Forge.
Well, that's I remember that from last week. I'm wondering, though, do you think I'm getting the sense that Hitler's kind of losing his punch? It's kind of like racist, calling somebody a racist. If everybody's a racist, nobody's a racist. If everybody's a Hitler, nobody's a Hitler. And I just you'd think that they'd be able to come up with something else. If you're going to call somebody a name, I mean, Hitler's really getting kind of old.
Well, yeah, maybe so, but it's worked for U.S. foreign policy for 40 years.
Well, I think that there's got to be a shelf life for that, though. There's a timeline, something that would...
I hope so. I mean, it's a really wildly overheated comparison invocation for anybody that knows much about history, but maybe that last phrase is the tell, because people's knowledge of World War II history is pretty damn lame, and it's almost as bad as Nikki Haley in the Civil War.
Yeah, that was I don't know if she's gotten that off her shoe yet or not.
And part of what's funny is she's the favorite candidate of the neoconservatives, and they've, oh my.
Yeah, well, another chorus of bomb, 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 Iran will be right up there. Maybe they'll play that at the convention for her. Who knows? But I'm curious, really, now that you've taken this deep dive into Davos and all the various things that, you know, you're going to eat bugs, you're going to be happy and all the rest of that. But what I'm concerned about, wondering about, is just how far are these morons getting with these programs? There's a stringent requirement list that attendees have to check off all these boxes. And so the people that show up there aren't just wackos and weirdos. I mean, they're people who got a lot of money, a lot of power. They're in a lot of positions where they can influence things and make things happen. That's part of the reason that they get invited and they meet there for their intellectual masturbation sessions and all the rest. But I'm wondering, just like looking at Last Rites, how many of the things that are on their agenda are actually moving forward? They're actually getting toeholds and handholds
Well, there's a lot of things that have gotten those handholds, especially in the last 4 years since the start of the COVID pandemic, which the World Economic Forum greeted like it was manna from heaven as far as vastly expanding government power over private citizens. There's a lot of these things which are moving forward. There's more of a backlash than there was a few years ago. But it's you know, there was a survey, two surveys. One recent survey here in the U.S. showed only about 20% of the people trusted the federal government. Second survey showed that 54% of the people, 54% want the government to protect them from false information. And if you can't add two and two together as far as the nature of government politics, okay, so the government's not trustworthy, but they're going to protect you against false information. It's the same thing with these, with this Davos crowd, the World Economic Forum groupies, because they have said and done so many things that were false or misleading or just, you know, craven for years. I mean, a favorite comment of mine was, you know, they had this video in which they promised that by the year 2030, you will own nothing and you will be happy. And mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, you know, not on my calendar.
Well, I was trying to find, you had a great line about that in the article about that type of that type of giddiness would be in short supply once they've been bashed around by the paternalistic ponderings of these people from Davos if they get their wish or when they
I mean, but there's this notion that the world elite has to protect the earth from humanity. And that's the slant of a lot of the things. I mean, that's a big reason they're talking about how people have got to stop eating meat almost entirely, if not entirely. And, you know, the bugs and stuff like that. But, you know, from my view, this whole shindig would have a lot more credibility if it was a meeting in the woods and they were subsisting on nuts and berries.
Well, it would certainly present an interesting picture. But here's that line that you had that was so good. Public euphoria could be in especially short supply considering other policies championed in Davos. And therein lies the essence right there in a nutshell. I think that's the they seem to be oblivious to that. And who was that guy? Are you I thought I saw something. Jojo Maida?
Yeah, there was a lady, she was a late entry into the article. Jojo Maida, she was hectoring people to recognize that making money from farming or fishing could be as guilty as people committing mass murder and genocide. And, you know, folks there don't realize if you get rid of the farmers and the fishermen, you know, you're going to have a shortage of caviar at these events.
Yeah, and everything else. That's kind of all inclusive. She was kind of all inclusive in that statement. You say, okay, fine. So if all of the peons and the serfs and the rest of us are eating bugs and we're so happy, and that murder and genocide could be leveled against anyone who is a farmer or a fisherman, where are you getting your food?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's bizarre to see some of the crackdowns on farmers in places like Holland. And there's huge protests in Germany as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I mean, you and I have got some similar background as far as having been raised around agriculture in our formative years. And I've written a lot about criticizing farm subsidies, but I am pro-farmer. You know, it's honest work. I'm glad folks are doing it. I never enjoyed baling hay. It wasn't as bad as picking peaches, but, you know, we'll just keep spiraling downward in the lower circles of Dante's hell. But there's a disdain for farmers and for people that do hard physical labor by this Davos crowd. And it's very unseemly.
It is. It's remarkably condescending. And I quite frankly would have traded your hay days with my chicken manure days.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean that's just
woo. I don't know if my sinuses have recovered yet from that experience, but those experiences, that was fun.
It was a good training to be a talk show host. In some of the locales which you dislike the most, which I'm not going to list.
Yeah. Well, it's a fairly short list, but you're right. There's not much resemblance between a shovel and a microphone, but they do tend to accomplish the same thing if you got the right material. And farming, I'm all in favor of farmers too. I've had some really good friends. One just died recently out in Kansas. He had like 5,000 acres.
Wow. I mean,
he had tractors bigger than my house, and a really, really nice guy, and an independent operator. It's just a little difficult to get involved, you know, extending the affection toward farmers whose middle names are Archer Daniels. You know, that's
yeah, that's true. And it's interesting. There's stereotypes. At the time I was growing up, maybe when you're growing up, about farmers being not very bright, but farming at this point is a capital intensive business, and you need to have some brains in order to acquire and maintain that capital and to keep your farm going. So
and hold off the feds, you know, barnstorming your milk supply and chicken warehouse and eggs and all the rest. The egg timer is starting to blink. But I just want to get in that one plug that you had for the president of Argentina, Javier Milei, said some really choice words. There's Tom Woods has got a transcript of that over at LRC. I don't know if you saw it, but they must have been really embarrassed. They invited that guy to show up for sure.
Well, I think that they wanted to pretend to be open. The head of Heritage Foundation talked there today, but it was fun to see the Argentine president there, and it was fun to see a clip by Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, who was raging against libertarianism like it's a threat to the survival of the world, but. It's not my fault that people like him made government hated.
That is a fact. Well, we've run out of time and road once again. We've got to bring down that very fancy Bovard Memorial, Curtain of Mercy. If you haven't done so already, point your electric rodent towards jimbovard.com and read Jim's entire post piece and a few other gems you might have missed. While you're mousing around, you might want to pay a cyber visit to Brian and Wilson Writes at Subset.com for some other fun and semi-enlightening stuff. Get the book Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty. It's right there at Amazon. Don't be a schlub. Nothing better in the dead of winter than Last Rights and a choice bourbon in front of a roaring fireplace. That's assuming you have a fireplace. Meanwhile, imagine all that can happen over the next 7 days when the two and only will return with another tone-deaf earworm for your dining and dancing pleasure. Naturally, that will include the latest nausea-inducing buffet of Washington salmonella serving as we watch psychopaths continue their work in destroying the American dream. For James Bovard, Brian Wilson reminding you, government is the organized force aligned against the individual. We'll see you next week.